Before we move into the next hour, something I do at the end of each hour or of the show is to remind you that every week, both hours of the, I upload both hours of this show to my personal blog space for it shortly after I get home at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. Those usually remain there. Well, they will remain there for at least 3 years. So, and with that, we have slid over. We're a half a minute now into 5 o'clock. So let's go ahead and just do this for those of you just tuning in, or for those of you carrying on from the first hour, thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM, located here in Lower Crothers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. For those of you that just tuned in, my name is Bruce, and this is Finding a Voice, spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock, and we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And again, for those of you who might have just tuned in, I'm going to go ahead because I do have a little time on this show. Sometimes there isn't time to repeat who was in the first hour, but I will do that only because I have already mentioned the blog space. So if people were interested, they might be interested in finding, say, a friend or something or someone they know or someone they might want to hear. I can tell you how to listen to that again, through the blog space. So I guess I've already done that, and I'll do it again at the end of this hour. But just to tell you what to look for or what you find when you get there, let's just do this. You heard in the first hour readings by Layli Jamali, Catherine Jones, Joe Cardinal, Michael Hay, Gwen Whitford, Moss Rott, Meg Freer, Leo Roberts, Fiona McMillan, Olivia Parent, Sonali Samaya, Penny Page, Don Spector, Eric Folsom, Carrie LeBlanc, Harlequin Crowe, Judith Popiel, Marinus Sorensen, and then myself. Now, here in the second hour from, again, that July 8th and the Journey Continues open mic, you will hear first a reading that was sent to me by Guvu, who is AKA, I should just say, Gurveen Dang. And then you will, after that, you will hear readings at the Elm in the second round by Joe Cardinal, Kelly Chartier, Michael Hay, Gwen Whitford, Leo Roberts, Sonali Samaya, Don Spector, Eric Folsom, Harlequin Crowe, Judith Popiel, Marinus Sorensen, and then again me. My first mention in each hour, essentially, is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but I do try to include those things intact and just to honor the creative integrity of both the author or songwriter and the piece. I briefly mentioned readings in the round. I'm in the first hour. I'll do it again here just in case you tuned in and aren't familiar. It's that when the event starts, there's a sign-up sheet, and people sign up if they want to read, and then I just work off that sheet. I call people up, they read one poem, and then sit down. We do a first round that way, and then we do have an intermission, and we do a second round, and that's what you're going to hear now. But the first thing in the past, and including today, I have offered to air work by those who couldn't make it to the open mic if they'd send me an audio file of their work, and I would offer it so that they could be present, at least for the radio portion of this event. So let's go ahead and just move straight into that first, and then I'll be right back after that. And who you're going to hear is, again, Guvu, that's G-U-V-U, a.k.a. Gurveen Dang, with her poem called Letter to Darwish. Here we go.
And it was Mahmoud Darwish who wrote, "We have on this earth what makes life worth living in Arab." He talked about lists like last days of September, April's hesitation, the hour of sunlight in prison, aroma of bread at dawn. This is my letter to Darwish, adding to the list of reasons and things that we can look for in life, which makes life worth living. I call it as letter to Darwish. Letter to Darwish. The confidence winter wears is astounding. And then there the summers come, melting away the pride of the thick snow. We have on this earth what makes life worth living, Darwish. Nusrat lived for less than a century. We live to witness and listen to the voice of Nusrat. The words of Shihab, who wrote about what fireworks do to a soldier. The words of poets who can talk what's real. We are witnesses of our parents' failures. We live another day to listen to the exaggerated greetings from our mother. We live for the bread, the low ceilings, a pen that makes you want to write on paper. We are witnesses of our lives, of our wasted potentials. We have on this earth what makes life a little more bearable, Darwish. We live to beg in our prayers. We live to realize God doesn't give what we beg for. God gives what we have faith in. And sometimes our faith is in our own disaster. So disaster it is, disaster it is. We live for the cries of a child, the angelic face of a five-year-old baby. It reminds us of our innocence, which we so often hide to protect ourselves from the threats of this world. The face of a baby restores our faith and goodness. We live to hear the hymns, the songs, the chorus, the seven notes, the rhythm, the lyrics, all which points towards our griefs, turned inwards in the direction of the first loss we experienced as a child. Darwish, there are days when I don't want to see my own hands, and these hands want to go after my neck, and my neck wants to rest in a lover's arm, and arms of a lover are never faithful. And the thing about faith is, it can only be found amidst or after a disaster. Before the disaster, you think you have a plan. Months, years, decades, we lose it all to honor our parents, which is to say, Darwish, if your mother keeps herself small, you learn to keep yourself small. The glimpse of rain, the glimpse of snow falling under the street light. How odd it is, the street lights are funded by taxes, but rain is always free. We live to see the end of our sufferings. Some of us are but creatures of hope. We live to witness the colors, the draping of a sari, the art of mehendi on palms of an Indian bride, her palms in the laps of a husband, demanding the proof of happiness from the bride. We live because we need a witness for dead bodies. We live to stand up in front of a judge, saving life of a victim, because our eyes became the witness to the horror. Our pain isn't a broken refrigerator that needs mending. Pain doesn't need fixing. Pain needs to be shared. All our pain ever asks is to be witnessed. We live so that our wounds can be witnessed. We live to witness our own wounds. We live to listen to the sound of bangles. We live to hear our own names called from the lips of a lover. We live to name our children. We live to see the lights going off in the toy store. We live mostly to not become what our families tell us to become. We live to listen to York's How to Disappear Completely and Floyd's Comfortably Numb and Beatles' Hey Jude. We are but creatures of creation. We live to create. Hands of God created our own hands so that we can create another and the other and another. We live to think. We live to remember. We sleep to forget what we remember. We live for our wanting to exist. We sleep to forget that we exist. The calls of bird in the mornings, the deafening silence after a gunshot, the screams of a one-legged woman. We live to fulfill our desires. We live to live in wonder. We live for the hundredth hour that arises after a crisis. What on earth which makes life worth living? Popsicles, not jazz, but the drums, the flute, the melodies, and the wind touching against our skin. We live, most importantly, to feel. We struggle not because we can't withstand great amounts of pressure. I think a human is capable of that. We survive. We struggle because there were no witnesses to our struggle.
And, excuse me, you just heard Guvu, a.k.a. Gurveen Dang, with her poem called Letter to Darwish. It is about 12 minutes after 5 o'clock. Now coming up, we're going to move back into the Elm Cafe. And again, I will mention that occasionally some spoken word or poetry or music played on this show may contain strong language. But again, I try to play it intact as much as I can to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. So coming up, you'll hear readings at the Elm Cafe in the second round by Joe Cardinal, Kelly Chartier, Michael Hay, Gwen Whitford, Leo Roberts, Sonali Samaya, Don Spector, Eric Folsom, Harlequin Crow, Judith Popiel, Marina Sorensen, and then me. And let's go ahead and just go straight into that now.
Welcome back, everybody. Thank you. Let's give yourselves a round for sticking around for round two. Yeah. Coming up first this round, we have Joe Cardinal. Let's bring him up.
Hi, this one's by request. It's called How to Politely Tell a Moth to Fuck Off. Listen, you paper-winged bastard, lampshade cultist, twitching junkie ghost in a tenement project chapel. You pay no rent. You hold no job. You flap like belief in rehab. I tried making nice, but you kamikaze'd my face like some polyester evangelist, hell-bent on redemption via wattage. What are you, a metaphor that OD'd in a freshman poetry class? Some errant soul drafted into God's insect militia because he was bored and needed another cosmic middle finger fluttering near my eye? You're the ex-girlfriend of Bugs. You only come around when I'm half-naked, opening my third eye to nihilism. It's 2:44 a.m. I've got boxer shorts and a grudge, veiled regret and a six-pack of existential dread. My patience? Collapsing like a shopping mall. Slow, inevitable. Failing in the slow, polite way civilizations do. And still this little bastard thinks I'm the moon. Flap, 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 like a junkyard angel, a head full of amphetamine, crashing again and again into the same damn bulb, like maybe this time enlightenment sticks. I drink to forget, he flaps to remember whatever cruel joke left him behind. This isn't metaphor anymore, this is me, shirtless, staring down a bug too stupid to die and too committed to insomnia to leave. Go, leave, get out. Find another soul to haunt, someone with windows open like fresh wounds, but not me, not tonight. I've got nothing left but a heartbeat, a hangover, and the slow hum of madness and a rolled up magazine named Mercy. Thank you.
Thank you. give Joe another hand. Let's bring up Kelly Chartier.
Once again, following the direction of a mental breakdown, there's the thrust and then the descent. And part of the descent, at least for me, is alienation. So this is one about alienation. It's called unutterable. I can't be the normal you want me to be. My otherness keeps stopping me with unutterable reminders of what I really need in life that is so impossible, yet still persisted upon. I've tried so hard to be your ideal, to please you, only to stutter in the act, expose myself in all of my embarrassment as an alien stuck in your world, trying to make the mask fit. Why do you keep me, I wonder, while awkwardly holding up the likeness of your expectations, finding no clues that lead to an answer, just plenty of subtle reminders of all the mistakes I've made that require an apology. I want to say I'm sorry for being this thing. I did not mean to be here. I'm not sure how it happened. But I'm stopped by the tormenting images flashing across my lonesome mind of the home I belong to that is too far away for you to understand me.
So give Kelly another hand. Let's bring up Michael again.
I don't know which poem to read. I have two options. Can I actually like see which title sounds better? Is that okay? One is called "We Are Eating Peaches," and one is called "Official Certificate in Presence."
Peaches.
Okay, good. Thank you. I'm actually more comfortable with that one, anyways. Okay. We are eating peaches, ripe and juicy. Not that fuzzy peach confection, but the ones designed with creation. Perfectly curved comme un derrière parfait, fluffy like your tan legs when you refuse to shave. The juice is running down our chins. It tastes like bubblegum 1980s anthems, teenage pop stars flashing pearly white smiles, an entire mall of shoppers breaking into ecstatic flash mob dances. The flesh is verging on Oprah ripe, a fibrous, quivering custard, juice pooling in the joint of the humerus bones in our elbows. Peachy dew drops drip. We are having so much fun. The pit remains when we're finished sucking until it starts to taste of tannins and dearth. It's actually a seed we plant where we like under the DVP in that spot that gets all the light. The keys to this orchard were mailed to us shortly after our Daisy passed away. She was only two and never fully got to see life. A budding adolescent, spirited in temperament, her eyes brightening each time the doorknob creaked. A skeleton key, if there ever was one, made of bone and ivory in a brown envelope with no return address. Just a whiff of lavender, dew, and charcoal, no instructions, totally ominous. We tried the key on a doorway we drew on our wall in chalk, which opened here to this orchard where all the fruit is perfectly ripe and the snakes give you directions to any fruit you like. This next part is in snake accent, so I can't, you know. Here in this garden, summer's breeze holds true while ripe fruit freely falls like autumn in endless loop. It's for those whose sadness has them eating their tails, a place to grieve and shed your skin, else everything that goes around will be coming back again. Together 8 years when we found out scientifically after that first miscarriage, you'd never bear fruit again empirically. Coming from a kennel up north of Desolation Sound, orphaned, played out by a bad hand, we'd driven through a snowstorm to rescue the poor darling and love her like our child. We chose peaches, though, in the Grange, lucky ones, only Mama Fuku's, like that restaurant in Spadina, in Shangri-La-Di-Da. We go for every anniversary, always slurping on extremely spicy noodles with milk on the side. We take annual selfies in front of that mural of Neil Young, Russ Never Sleeps, and that's when finally we decided to adopt a dog. Good thing that all dogs skip the Bardos and go directly to heaven. She had blue eyes like the sky today, and she didn't deserve to die. But sitting in the grass eating peaches, all of that sadness is far away. What department issues keys to these in-between spaces astray our thoughts and our bereavements, where we can walk slowly in the warm grass and read the ley lines in the bark of these trees? The only thing is, though, that the fruit stays here when we pass through, or else it molds and quickly returns to the dirt, as do all imaginary things when confronted with mundanities. Here, these fruits will never be a pie, a gelato, or a 16-component modernist dessert, just a memory of the nectar dripping on our shirts. We pass through the arches, holding hands covered in syrup. We keep the key in a shoebox under the bed with her collar and the stuffies she judiciously shredded. I never had another peach again from a greengrocer or a roadside stand. And we got another golden retriever and named her Peachy. She's off to daycare for some play with her friends. And quietly, gratefully, we put the key away. It takes thousands of years for the fruit to bloom here, and only a few moments of fleeting bites to absorb this tight grief knocking on our chests. And use this Bic lighter in your pocket. Light the stinging of your history, satisfied with no beginnings and no endings, only darkness and Mars black canvases to ignite into flames and new memories.
Let's give Michael another hand. Let's bring up Gwen.
Hello again. Continuing with the theme of cafes, this poem is called Fly on the Wall. Conversations overheard by chance, confidences communicated in public places by strangers in proximity. While I'm occupied with sipping, reading, writing, unintentionally listening in, as my seemingly innocent ears absorb the ways of the world, and the revelations that people disclose over a cuppa or two. I confess to being a keeper of secrets by changing situations and circumstances to make a make-believe world. I don't know them anyway, and truth is stranger than fiction. Thank you.
So give Gwen another hand. Let's bring up Leo.
Once again, I must fill time while I look through my Google Drive. All right. So I went to Bruce's workshop at ArtFest, his intuitive writing workshop. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I had been struggling to write for a while, and I'd started to get my groove back, and Bruce put into words a lot of stuff that I'd been thinking, and he gave me like many more techniques to actually get the ball rolling. So then I spent my first hour of work working on this piece. Please don't report me to Laura Carter, CEO and Chief Librarian of the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, whose extension number is 3486. That's not true. That's my extension. Okay, come on. All right. So yeah, this is the result of that exercise. I think the key takeaway from this is that I can't walk through a park without feeling complicated about it. Okay. It's a gray morning that threatens rain. Bleary-eyed painters, knitters, sculptors, artists all truck their work and arrange them in tents. God may move through their hands, but he does not pay for their groceries. I don't know if I'd want to sell the fruits of my soul, or if it'd be worse for no one to buy any at all. I have learned at events like these to pass by, giving only furtive glances, so as to not raise any hopes. In the distance, I see a man doing pull-ups on a tree branch and step-ups on a bench. His reps are too few, so I can't tell whether it's exercise or vanity. Maybe he has rippling muscles, glistening with sweat, radiant in this dawn. But I am far away, and to me, he is just a shirt and arms and pants. Embedded below a tree lies a stone slab. I brush away branches, read that it commemorates a day of peace 12 years past. It condemns the horrors of war. Why does it look like a grave? Nearby, a louder memory, cannons of different ages are arranged upright, as if ready to be fired at any moment. The aperture of the newest one is covered in cobwebs. Upon a stone monument, plaques list fallen soldiers. The ones for the Korean and Afghanistan War are identically formatted. Cookie cutters should have no place here. A noticeably Japanese name is among the list, implying a journey I will never know. An inscription insists on the glory of service, but a nearby grave to peace would beg to differ. Someday soon, the memorial will be older than anyone who could look at it. I read every name, but none stick to my memory. The bottom of the monument reads, "Their names liveth forevermore." I wish I could do more for these names. I wish I could leave behind more than just mine.
Give Leo another hand. Let's bring up Sonali.
This one does have a name. It's called "Do You Know How Much I Miss You?" I reverted back into my father's daughter, the young girl who believed her barrel of love to be bottomless. And in this moment, I am a child screaming for safety, not knowing that such a place simply does not exist. I know better now, but I was happier then. But I'm unsure if I know happiness at all now, even less certain if happiness knows me back. But I recall us meeting on the Sunday afternoons that were once just reserved for us three, happiness, Dad, and me. Thank you.
So give Sonali another hand. Let's bring up Eric.
So it's July, and like a lot of us, I wish that I was out on the water in a canoe. And I thought, oh, I have a poem about being out in the water on a canoe, except that it's set in the 1700s, just at the beginning of the Seven Years' War, and it's about colonialism and war and, oh, sorry, I made that complicated, didn't I? So... this is from the book Le Loutre. Abbé Jean-Louis Le Loutre was a clergyman, but also a war leader. Where it says Roy de Pioc, that's Breton, which would have been Le Loutre's original language, his first language. The end of the poem is set on a portage around Grand Falls in New Brunswick, if you know New Brunswick at all. And I better shut up. This is called Le Loutre's Silence. Pioch, they told me as a boy, peace or hush. Right, Pioch, give peace. A grandmother responds to the demands of a nagging child, or an aunt beseeches the precocious one whose orphan mouth is full of questions. Give peace, said all the adults, at odds with the loneliness in the bay of his heart. Peace which passeth understanding, the brotherhood of the church said, a sturdy, undying father at last. Holy Mother, blessed among women, give us more than mend and make do, more than a hobbled truce paid for on a windy salt pine battleground. O Father, give me context, a place where I am. To those who believe I can bestow peace, can proffer the gift like a private sacrament, you are misguided fools, blinking tailors, blinded by the bright sun of violence. If I withdraw my hand, war still comes. Invasions will not be undone, resistance not quenched by my words or my silence. The tide must surge, and we must wrestle the tiller. Voyaging up the St. John River last year, a butterfly touched our gunwales and rested. "Ee, little sister," the native oarsman said, no pause in the rhythm of his paddle. She pumped her wings after half an hour, stirred her insect blood, and flew lightly away. I thought to myself, we need more friends. Everything on the river is a sign. And not a sign. The cold pool, the temptation of liquid clarity, perfect action, magical efficacy. The rumble of the Grand Falls stirred my chest. Water pummeled the rocks as I gazed up, scanning the steep portage, listening. Omens and wishes will not make this journey, my Mi'kmaq companion behind me said. Put on your moccasins, Father Otter. We walk today.
To give Eric another hand, let's bring up Harlequin.
Lipstick. It's easier to smile in lipstick. Not some broad-mouthed grin, some teeth-baring reflection of revelry, but the small, simple, everyday kind of smile. The subtle uplifting of a lip shared simply because you feel happy.
So give Harlequin another hand. Let's bring up Judith Papil.
Read my poem. I just wanted to put a plug in for the Writers' Fest, and Margaret Atwood is coming in August, and the program will be out at the end of July, so maybe some of you would like to attend the poetry sessions. I'm not sure what they're going to have, but check it out. So, this poem is a little hard. Because my uncle died, actually, remarkably, he passed away on the 30th of June when I was doing my reading at Arts Fest. So I haven't finished writing the story of him. I grew up partly in Saskatchewan on a big farm, and he was the patriarch. He never married. He took care of the farm after my Bubba and Jito died. And I talked to him a lot. And I've been writing stories of the farm, and he would listen to my stories. And anyway, my heart has been heavy. So I wrote this poem, and it's not complete, and I'm writing stories to follow up for my memoir about Uncle Roman. So our farm was in northern Saskatchewan in Nipawin, 3 hours north of Saskatoon, so you can imagine. But my ancestors were very hardworking. They came here in 1903 and with nothing, and they were given nothing except a plot of land. And maybe that land belonged to the Indigenous people. But remarkably, my uncle honored the Indigenous. In his later years, he gave them money and he took care of them. So I think he had a sense. He was 88, so he lived a long... Anyway, enough. Here's the poem. Inner heart. Waves of grief curdle within the inner heart, resting on the shoreline of my emotions. Standing in a stupor, hot summer sun shining down on Afternoon Lake. No waves heard. There is a silent reminiscing of childhood days. Only the distant silent circling of Great Eagle is seen. Circling above waves of grief, curdle in my subconscious. Heart listens. Like soft, unripened cheese. Curdles of memories. Curdles of longing. Curdles of tears. Curdles of conversations not yet had. If only. Thank you.
As we give Judith another hand, let's bring up Marina Sorensen.
I have a habit of feeling invisible and trying to be invisible and not so much with people, obviously. You can see me very well, but sometimes. But especially when I'm sitting in nature, I can sit there for a long time and things happen. And so this is one of those things that happen. It's called Squirrelkin. Two squirrels reconnoiter in the trees that are shading me. They approach each other calmly because they're kindred. They're both young, so they're probably litter mates. They're on opposite sides of the branch as they nuzzle. Their nuzzling noses inform them what the other's been up to. The smell of the other tells them that all is well. Their social instincts want them to keep each other in mind. They continue to nuzzle along each other's flanks. Their noses satisfied and their thoughts co-regulated, they gamble off together. After a short aerial dance, they come together again. This time, they go straight to sniffing each other's butt. Satisfied now to know what the other has just been eating, as well as what each other has just been pooping, they go off together and out of my sight.
Let's go ahead and give Marinus another hand. And Grace again, let's give her another hand. And I say it every time, all of you are the reason this series is as wonderful as it is. And makes you want to come back, I guess. But anyway, we've heard some wonderful poetry here again this evening. Before I read a final poem and get us out of here, give yourselves and everybody else another hand. This is called Questions. I ask questions in the dark, alone, not sure if anyone is listening. I ask also for breath, and have been given it so far. So perhaps someone is. I too ask forgiveness for my occasional sense of not being enough or too much, or of being lost when the way is clearly marked. To all those times I have not heard a response, perhaps it not needed, perhaps the breath enough. Thank you. Thanks everybody for coming out. We'll be back on the first Tuesday night of the month next month.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you, Bruce.
And you just heard from again that July 8th and the Journey Continues open mic reading at the Elm in that second round. Readings by Jill Cardinal, Callie Chartier, Michael Hay, Gwen Whitford, Leo Roberts, Sonali Samaya, Don Spector, Eric Folsom, Harlequin Crow, Judith Popiel, Marina Sorensen, and me. It is almost 40 minutes after 5 o'clock, let's go ahead and do this, and I'll be right back.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music.
a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast to Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Cornell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Tune in Sundays at 11 p.m. for Orchestral Maneuvers After Dark with me, DJ Squared. Each episode features a great mix of new and vintage, Canadian and international, new wave, punk, post-punk, garage rock, pop, electronica, ambient, and even the occasional remix. Sweet beats are in store for all to enjoy. Join in the fun, OMD, every Sunday at 11 right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
And you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. My name's Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online at www.cfrc.ca. And the show is Finding a Voice. It is roughly 43 minutes after 5 o'clock. And I do have a bit of time today, so I'm going to include one song now and one to take us out. Same artist I've chosen. Logan Statz is a Mohawk singer, songwriter from the Turtle Clan of the Six Nations of the Grand River. He released a CD, I believe it was his second, in 2023. And here is the title track off of it. And it's called A Light in the Attic.
You don't blame my nose for bleeding all over your Sunday dress. No, I won't blame you for leaving this old house in a mess. to wash her makeup off. She would leave her keys at home, make sure all the lights were off. It's one that she forgot, accident or no.
Just heard Logan Stats off of his 2023 album called A Light in the Attic, and this was the title track of that CD. So the CD is the same name. I'm going to play another song off of that to lead us out. So I hope you can stay tuned for that as well. I will mention that I just happened to notice that Kingston Grand Theater will be hosting him and Julian. Let's see if I can find it here. Oh, Julian Taylor on January 15th. So coming up early next year. So, and I think tickets are already on sale. So if you're at all interested, I didn't know he was coming back to Kingston that quickly or that this closely or whatever the word is. But anyway, maybe I'll just do this. Is there's still a good portion of the show left, and what I'd like to do is before I get into sharing a few events and maybe calls for submissions, is to thank all of you for tuning in to the show. Sometimes I get carried away and I'm talking too much. I run out of time and I want to make sure and always allow that. So I do want to thank you for having tuned into the show today. Also would like to thank all of those poets who came out to the July open mic, the monthly open mic called And the Journey Continues at the Elm Cafe. And, of course, to the Elm Cafe and Grace for taking care of us there that night, but the Elm for always being such a generous and gracious host as we meet there. Just a quick reminder, too, before we move on, something I do at the end of every segment of the show is just to remind you that I do upload both hours of this show to my personal blog space for it shortly after I get home at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. It does remain there for 3 years. And yeah, all of them remain there for 3 years. I would like to share a few messages. I have a couple of calls I think I'll plug too, but because I'm airing today the open mic from July, I'm going to mention that coming up this Tuesday, because it is a first Tuesday of the month series, is the next one at the Elm Cafe. And the series actually began in 2009, so the Elm Cafe, as you heard from one of the poets that read, just celebrated their 9th anniversary here in the last month or two. And so this started long before that, but this is our, I think, our 4th venue since 2017. But that will be happening at the Elm Cafe Tuesday, August 5th. The doors open 6:30. The event runs from 7 to 9:15. There is another first Tuesday night of the month reading relatively close. It's in Madoc. They do meet, but they are, just thought I'd point out in case you haven't seen their Facebook page, and that's the best place to probably check out what's going on there all the time. But if you haven't noticed it, they are taking a summer break this month. So they will not be meeting on August 5th. So just thought I'd give you a shout out about that. Couple of maybe calls for submissions I might have time for that. The League of Canadian Poets just announced this one. This is their annual Leslie Strutt Award. And I'm going to just read from their website. The Leslie Strutt Poetry Contest is an award that provides a prize for a single best poem submitted to the judges. Contest is open to all poets, professional, emerging, and first time in Canada. It's run each summer, it says, in memory of poet and friend Leslie Strutt. So go to their website. It is, just go to the League of Canadian Poets. I think if you just type that in there, Leslie is L-E-S-L-E-Y, Strutt Award, it will take you straight to that page. Another one coming up, and a deadline for that's August 10th. Another one coming up is closer to home, I guess, or more local, and it's open to local, I believe it's local poets, but it's for emerging poets. It says it is part of the Kingston Writers Fest program this year, the event this year, 4-day event. But it says, send us your poems, haikus, villanelles, sonnets, prose poems, whatever poetic form stirs your soul. It says, winner will receive 2 tickets to the Margaret Atwood Kingston Writers Fest event on August 24th. That's a kind of a pretty cool thing because that is sold out. And it's an invitation to a signed personal copy of her book, and it's $350 value is what you'll get. This is for poems by emerging, and they need to be unpublished poems, let's put that, and for emerging authors. And with that, I think I better start to wrap things up because I want to play this one last song and make sure I get that set up as well. Here we go. Again, you have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. It is 55 minutes after 5 o'clock. Again, my heartfelt thanks to all of you out there for tuning in. Please stay tuned for 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music, hosted by Rob Carnell. And hope I can catch you here next week. And let's go ahead. Here is Logan Statz again from A Light in the Attic CD. And this song is called California. Have a great, great weekend, everybody.
Out of a bone, and you had on my heart, boy, and called it home. My baby don't leave me, let she leave me alone. No, my baby don't leave me, let she leave me alone. She took off without warning on a plane. Your mind and your best friend on your knees and at the top of your lungs, screaming love, please don't go. California's burning down, if you can't leave me in this town. And I remember the day that she left. Showed up at the airport security chair. And too much to drink and a second too late. Never saw her again when she got on that plane. My baby don't need me, let she leave me alone. My baby don't leave me, let she leave me alone. She took off without warning on a plane to California, and you never seen your lover again. Lost your mind and your best friend on your knees and at the top of your lungs, screaming. Don't leave me in this town.
don't leave me.